Okay.
All right. And Kevin, just so you know, we record meetings. We're under the district's Open Meeting Act's requirements. We shall get started. So, is there anything, Kevin, we kind of introduced each other, but is there anything you would like to say or introduce yourself to the group more?
Sure, I'll just give some cliff notes. So I'm Kevin Whitfield. I just started at the committee like 3 weeks ago. I think this is week three. Prior to that, my only job out of law school has been a public defender in Columbia, South Carolina. So that's kind of my background before coming here. And this project was kind of one of the most exciting I learned about when interviewing for the job, so I'm pretty excited to be here.
How long were you a public defender?
2.5 years.
Great. Okay. Welcome. And, Koch is newer to this group, but Dave and Laura and Paul have heard about this project to varying degrees for years now. So
they predate you.
They predate us. And I don't know, anyway, these guys have been around a while though on this. So plenty of history we can go through. If you want to catch up with any of them too, I'm sure they'd be happy to talk. All right. Few kind of other just announcements before digging in any questions. I will be out of the office personally the last couple weeks of March, so the 19th through the 30th. So if there's anything you want to get in touch with me before then, it's really this week or next week, and then there'll be a little lag time. I'm probably going to tap Rachel to be the contact point while I'm away, but, staff is generally here otherwise. And
I'm sorry, what's the date?
So I'm out the 19th through March 30th. I will be in a tropical locale, although I'm not sure I will be able to compete with Dave's usual suntan, full on in the sun. I don't know.
Is there a reason we're going to need to call?
No.
You're about to tell us the rest of the schedule.
At
5:01 tomorrow, you're ahead.
Yeah. No, right. No particular reason. I just,
something going to be due where I'm going to be like Rachel.
Nothing is due then. So the next due date is this Friday for comments on this last package, right? We had it all set back a week. So
Friday at midnight.
I'm sorry?
Friday at midnight.
That's what stick with Friday. The date. You go with the midnight deadline. I'm not going to.
Friday UTC gives us until 4 a.m.
As long as it's stamped, yeah. And,
thank you for the extra week.
Sure. Comments due in the package of various things this Friday. The next week, probably middle, end of the week, we will get out then the next set of materials. It's going to be, for the general part, some language and commentary on solicitation renunciation. And then on specific offenses, we'll be adding in homicide, various forms.
After or at the same time?
It's part of this package, yeah. They'll be in separate reports, but they'll go out at the same time, middle end of next week, as well as cruelty to children, kind of neglect of children, and then kind of comparable offenses for elderly and vulnerable adults. So kind of three main things.
So that'll be due in June?
Yeah. just to get a sense of the dynamics. Right. I think right now we're looking at a mid-March due date that will be fleshed.
In mid-March.
I'm sorry.
So I win.
Mid-May. Probably around the 18th, which would be 8 weeks. That's what I'm looking at, which gives plenty of time for discussion. Our April meeting, we can pick up if there's any kind of initial questions, but it's also will be a chance to go over the comments that we received back this week, right? To go over as a group anything to discuss at the next meeting in April. let's see. Yeah, just kind of last thing to kind of reiterate. You know, I've met with some of y'all individually, had questions, and I think that's a very helpful thing. So I'd encourage everybody, you know, if you have questions or comments, do that. Keep following up. You know, especially for like, you know, small things like typos, great to let us know. You know, just drop me an email or just tell us. We'll write it down to track for the next draft. And yeah, again, maybe we can flesh out some questions or kind of one-on-one that saves time with the group. Two other things. So one, I flagged this in the memo that went out last time, but you know, again, kind of want to just repeat. You know, going forward, so we put out, you know, the attempt penalties, you know, with the default kind of 50%, whatever the underlying predicate offense is. Going forward, just, you know, we're not always going to specifically flag it, but if you see something, right, in any offenses, like the next time for homicide, for child cruelty, that, you know, that 50% mark doesn't make sense to you, please go ahead and raise that, you know, as we kind of move forward, right? So, and, you know, same thing with this batch. We also, we didn't take a stance on kind of merger issues. We want to kind of first see how, like, you know, are these elements going to work? Is this kind of basic structure? And then, you know, kind of address merger a little bit further. But, like, if you all have specific thoughts on merger, even though it isn't, you know, specifically addressed, please feel free to raise them. So just, you know, right, some of these things, just want to have in everybody's head, even though we haven't necessarily raised them directly at this point, they're kind of some of these background issues to be aware of. Question?
No.
Okay. And, yeah, the last thing I wanted, and maybe this is a touchdown to talk a bit more, but actually, particularly with Dave and Laura and Katya, you all, I've had some questions, good questions from you guys, particularly with regard to robbery and kind of the basic kind of question of like how much we are, call it nesting or whatever, that we have references in the offense, right, to other offenses, and then those other offenses might have other references, right, and it gets too complicated. Whether or not it technically works or not, at least as a drafting matter, it might be confusing, right? And I've heard that from, you know, some of you, and I definitely agree, kind of going back. So we will, I just want to say, you know, that is something we will address, we need to address in the next draft. Now, how exactly? A little unclear, and we'll kind of see where your comments go. But I think that's right. We want to try and simplify this and keep it clearer and avoid any confusion on that. And also want to be technically accurate in terms of, look, are we really bringing in all of those elements? How does that work? So, and Paul, just so you know, Don just joined us in the room. Paul's on the phone.
Hey, Don.
Hi. Sorry, wait.
No worries. And this is, you're sitting next to Kevin now, who's the new attorney over with the Judiciary Committee. So anyway, I just wanted to flag that is definitely something we will need to look at. Others, and then I just kind of wanted to open it up. You know, I think since the last meeting, you all have had different, more opportunity to kind of finalize and dig in thoughts. So if there are things to raise with the group, great. Yes, Laura.
So I just thought of this, but it's based on a question that I asked you earlier. So one question is, so I have two questions. The first one, I'll start here. As an element or feature of robbery, there's no aspartation requirement anymore. Is that correct?
Right, correct.
Okay. So to me, then it leads to, so it made me concerned. I came up with a hypo of sort of like I'm leaving the robbery and a police officer chases me and gets injured. Does that injury of a protected person end up enhancing robbery? And then while you were talking, and I was half listening, focus on the half that I was listening, it occurs to me that the way it's written with respect to protected person, the protected person who's injured, law enforcement or not, doesn't have to be the person you rob. And that's a real expansion of those enhancements.
So,
I mean, robbery of a senior citizen isn't, and somebody happens to get hurt along the way who is a senior citizen. It's robbery of a senior citizen, right?
Unclear. So, with respect to the enhancements, I mean, and Janu will jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've seen any case law where, look, you know, the support for extending robbery to include persons, again, who are harmed on the way out, essentially, like, okay, so we have some, you know, fraudulent kind of like, you know, oh, can I see your pen for a second? Oh, thanks. And then, you know, start to run away, right? Like, okay, well, and on the way out, I, you know, bump district employee in the course of his duties, you know, and, you know, right. Does that trigger then an enhancement? Or better yet, it's a police officer, right? Let's just take that. Or an elderly person, right? Right now, all we have, you know, for the language, for those enhancements, I can pull up the, you know, because, look, these enhancements are, you know, written slightly different for different ones, right? And part of what we're trying to do is standardize the treatment of that by calling them all protected persons. But, you know, like, okay, so for minors, any adult who, being whatever, commits a crime of violence
against
minor.
Yeah.
Right. You know, now again, what's going on in when you contemplate the injury to the other person, that is the assaultive act that is part of the robbery. That is to say, again, the assault wasn't in you know, tricking you into giving me the thing. It was the violence occurred later. So
yeah,
who is the victim there?
It's unclear. So in the hypo, so first of all, this generally just doesn't arise under current law. The current robbery offense doesn't require infliction of a particular kind of injury. Right? It's just taking it
it's the enhancement. It's
right.
Whether you could have an enhancement, which is what you're trying to incorporate here.
Right. So, but even as to determine, like, who against whom is the robbery actually committed, you can imagine a hypo even under current law where, again, like, hey, can I see that book of yours? I'll give it right back to you. So they say, sure. And then I'm like, no, I'm taking this. And you try to get it back from me, and I sort of push you away. Like, that would be a robbery under current law.
Mm-hmm.
If instead someone else tried to get the book back on your behalf, and I pushed that one, pushed that person, again, possibly sort of that again constitutes robbery. The person that I pushed away was an elderly person or a minor, but it was your book. I don't think there's... I'm not aware of any law that would say, you know, who's the real victim of this robbery and can the enhancement be applied.
Isn't a critical point, or isn't, like, a more fundamental point in terms of overall proportionality that under this approach, that's one robbery, period. Whereas under current district law, so even in the hypothetical you're giving, that would be robbery plus, let's say it was a police officer who you injured on the way out, that would be a robbery charge, and that would be a assault with significant bodily injury against a police officer. If I understand correctly the way this is drafted, there's only one offense that has been committed under the facts that you're given, which would be one enhanced robbery. But
right.
So that's one offense versus two. So there's also that piece happening.
Can you show me the language specifically
you're
talking about? Because I was just flipping through and I didn't see.
Sure. So let me pull up again.
So then the nesting really matters, right?
Well, hold on. So what we're getting at, I think, is this. So the robbery, so for third degree, we have up on the screen. Sorry, I'll blow it up a little bit. I've always got that glare. I apologize. It's the idea that, you know, so you're taking property of another that's in their immediate actual possession or control by means of or facilitating flight by. So there wasn't violence used in the initial taking, right? But in the facilitating flight, physical force was used against another person, right? For instance.
Or can you see any other person that is the problem?
Yes. And look,
No,
Where is
the police officer coming?
So right, that could be the person. This any physical force overpowers any other person, or bodily injury to any other person. And Laura's raising the point, which is correct, that what this contemplates is that person may be the police officer who's standing right by you.
Property owner.
Who is a protected person, or it's an elderly person, so then we end up in a gradation. That isn't who I robbed.
Yeah, right. That isn't who you robbed, but it's the person who is, again, in facilitating flight, they are harmed. What happens to them? Turn back to Janu. Like, look, this kind of way of treating it, is how jurisdictions have done it when they don't have the aspartation element. Again, like, we don't have to go there right now, because under current district law, theft's complete as soon as it's the taking, right?
Right, okay.
You know, so once that's, it's no longer contingent on the movement just of the thing,
So I was just writing something yesterday, and I realize now that I've made my own problem, or at least what I've done doesn't solve it. So, I rob you, Richard, and you're standing next to your dad, right? And he gets hurt, but it's you. You're the one with the computer. I take your computer. I am robbing you, and in it, because he's there and I end up pushing you both, whatever, he gets injured at some level, right? I don't even need a lot, right? Just some bodily injury, because we have that level of protected person, I think, that gets an enhancement. So does his injury enhance my robbery of you, and then I also have an assault for him?
So I think the answer is no. In that case, you'd have to choose, right? Like, so if in the course of the robbery, from taking from me, you also, to facilitate flight, right, knock over the elderly person, you know, next to me, right? I think
I injure you both.
Yes, you know, and I think, you know, again, unclear. I think from the way it's currently drafted, but my sense would be, you know, that is potentially a robbery charge and an assault charge. Now, could it be charged as the robbery within it at the higher level because it's a protected person, and a separate assault charge against for harm to me, unprotected person, normal person? I don't know. We haven't addressed
it. So what I was proposing was just a preview, was the same language that you have in property about limitation on multiple convictions, right? Okay. But I put in, instead of same course of conduct, because I imagine there would be issues, that it was sort of the same, I think I said same person, but like same complaint, right? So it's not doing one robbery. It's not like you couldn't charge robbery and a totally separate assault in the course of conduct, and somehow the government has to choose. I was trying to allow for different victims. But in this scenario, it does seem like they should have to choose. If they're going to use your dad to enhance your robbery, they don't get to charge your dad. If they want to charge an assault against your dad, they don't get to use your dad to enhance your robbery,
right? That's right. So if you
cause
serious bodily injury to Richard's dad, you don't, and you use that to sort of grade up the robbery. You're right. You wouldn't also, the government would also be able to, wouldn't also be able to then charge the defendant with.
Where's the language?
Yeah.
Or do we need to do something?
Yeah, I think it's unclear on the face of the draft, and it's something we haven't specifically addressed in the commentary. We certainly could. Whatever language you've got, great.
Okay.
You know, pitch whatever language you want.
What would the enhancement be?
So it would just bump this up from being otherwise like a third-degree robbery. Say it was bodily injury to me and my elderly father. Both, well, you know, the choice would be, if you chose the elderly father as part of the charge.
Second degree. Recklessly causes bodily injury against someone other than an accomplice who's protected. So it would be second degree instead of third degree.
Just so we're clear, I agree with Laura.
Okay, yeah, right. So the
I don't know. I think devil's in the details how it's phrased, but I don't think...
That's right. I think this is the common sense, but I think you're right. It isn't spelled out. We don't have anything. Okay. But I think the common sense version would be you have to choose. You're not going to double count the assaultive conduct. But as long as it's not double counted, you might still face a choice, right? Which is to say, right, like if it's... and it could be that in, you know... it could be that you also get an assault charge for harming somebody in the flight, but that is, again, you're not using that as the predicate for the robbery charge. You're using the predicate, the immediate harm to me, and then you have an assault charge for whatever.
Before I say I agree with Laura,
yeah.
Is it a merger issue? Or is it a separate crime? In other words, does the government have to decide under what you're pitching that we, you know, if I charge the enhanced robbery and I lose the robbery portion, but it's clear elderly father gets hurt, have I lost the assault? Yeah. That doesn't sound right either.
That doesn't sound right. It also raises unanimity questions, great, because, like, fine, if you're going forward on both theories, right, of how the robbery was, you know, well, was there harm to, you know, person A or person B? And it depends, you know, like, I think you would need unanimity on, you know, was it person B or person A? Again, just not addressed, I think, in the current language. So if you want to...
Part of what makes it weird is I still think, and somebody can help me if I'm wrong, but part of it is that the injury is a free-floating thing having nothing to do with the person who owns the property.
That's right.
That's who the victim... Well, today, we would say the victim of the robbery is the person who has the property.
It's not entirely free-floating. So here's the thing. The sequence is reversed, right? This is the odd thing about this situation, is it's the force comes after the taking. Usually, it's the taking is either immediately together or in order to get the thing. But this reverses it. And so the sequence is different, but it's still... You know, we have the language, you know, it's facilitating flight by... So it has a connection. It isn't as though...
it's not just same time and place.
That's right. Or even like, you know, I'm running, or, you know, fine. I steal Katya's pen, and a block away, I slow down, and, I don't know, just decide to do some other something. And, you know, another guy I've had a beef with for a while comes up and we start a fight. Like, that isn't facilitating the flight.
More likely somebody's chasing you and you push somebody out of the way.
Yeah, and
the other guy's in the way of the alley and you go...
Right.
That's right. And that would be facilitating flight. But I think unrelated conduct that isn't facilitating the flight from the taking, that's excluded. So there is still a nexus.
So if Katya turns around and is going through her bag and you snatch her laptop and run out the door and you don't injure anybody, what is that?
Well, that would also... So we've also excluded the pickpocketing version of robbery from this. So that wouldn't even be robbery.
At this point, all you've done is theft from a person.
Okay. So... it's theft of a person, which presumably is lower than robbery. Katya is our victim.
Yep.
Now, you're running out the door, and Rachel's coming in, and you knock her out of the way to get to the elevator. Yep. And all of a sudden, we've robbed Katya?
No, that would just be theft of a person from Katya, and then potentially a separate form of assault. Because robbery...
No, that would probably, under the language here...
Yeah, I would say it's robbery. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
So it is now a free-floating force.
Yes.
Yeah, so the use of force to facilitate flight can change what was a theft from the person into a robbery.
So if you would just stand out of the doorway and say, Rachel, please, after you.
Yeah, and it's absolutely, you know, like, if you're
and
not
wait,
using
force to
flee...
And what would it be under current law? And under current law, it's not free-floating, because we would still call that robbery.
No, current law would be a robbery.
Because the grab was... Okay.
Yeah, under current law, you can take it from someone's pants that are next to the bed where he's sleeping in, and it's a robbery.
That's right.
That feels like a stretch.
That's
the question is, how close is the pants?
No, right. No, really.
That was the case.
Someone took the wallet from the other room.
Okay, but we're trying to do better than that.
Well, and I think we are. Now, have we done, have we have further distance to go?
There are two things I have. One is, if that's the case, I think you need to clearly say that in the commentary.
Okay.
If that's and what is where
that? Which one?
Yeah.
The that about the example of pushing her out of the way.
Okay.
Because I don't know that that's intuitive.
Gotcha.
From the facilitating flight.
From the facilitating flight statement by itself.
Sure.
The other is, I'm not convinced that we should not have two classes of robbery, perhaps with different sets of penalties. That's the robbery, force and violence versus the robbery, stealth and swipe, whatever.
So we have back, that. So
it's a separate, separate.
Oh, yeah.
You want come back the pickpocket as
a different class of robbery,
right?
As opposed to making it a theft.
Yes, we'll come back to that in just a second because that is a different kind of structural point, but it's related, obviously. And good. So commentary, adding in at least an example,
that's
you know,
that
to like drop a footnote, just kind of like to actually spell out how this would occur, would clarify this. Your concern
and therefore
is,
no assault charge against, or we see it's, well, we it ends time. Up being the multiple whatever.
Exactly.
They're not going to get both.
Right. That's right. And my guess is.
Am I now reckless to the fact that she's a DC government employee?
I'm sorry?
Am I reckless to that?
Depending on the.
I mean, we're in this building.
Are you in this conference room?
Yeah.
Or are you out
but
on,
I am too.
You know,
yeah.
Right?
I mean,
well, I don't know what you are. But we're not DC employees.
Right. This is the same kind of thing, you know.
But it's a question of whether I'm reckless as to it, which is.
Consciously disregard.
So I win that one, right?
I don't know. Right? Like if you're a uniformed person, right? You know, uniformed police officer.
I've got my badge.
You've got his badge. Is like
how close was your badge? Right.
Exactly. No, but like, you know, and this is a factual determination. Goes to the fact finder. You know, was the person, you know, do you find the person was, you know, right? You know, yeah.
Okay.
So I was going to sort of clarifying question. So I take the point that you want sort of aggregating factors to have to be inflicted upon the victim of the robbery, the person against whom the robbery was committed. Right? So if I'm the elderly person, you take my wallet.
When does my flight end?
That's good. Let's finish this first, though.
Okay.
And then
but that's our problem. The reason why I just went from theft from a person to a robbery is because on my way out the door, I quite frankly, Kutch is oblivious.
Yep.
She's on her phone with her back turned.
Yep.
I'm not even rushing out the door, but I run into Rachel.
Well, but then you wouldn't be reckless. Then you probably haven't recklessly caused bodily injury. I mean, you know, it's a question.
She's like, ow! I mean, I did.
But I don't know if it's
assault.
That's accidental, right? What you're describing, like, you know.
Okay.
You're not overpowering.
Well, yeah, you know, both the degree of injury,
but it's not reckless.
Yeah.
And the mental state. You know, basically,
but
it has to be a real assault.
It has to be assault, right.
That is then happening on the way out.
If you just, like, bump into me or something, I don't think that would
even though sense. I'm doing, even though I'm technically, I don't,
oh,
well,
so
I guess that's the question,
if,
is what's the flight?
The other thing is, if in the hypo where you're bumping into Rachel in the doorway, and that use of force is the sole basis for robbery, that would actually have to be knowingly. And to kick up to the, because the core robbery requires that you knowingly use force, cause bodily injury, or commit a criminal menace. So in that sense, you accidentally bump into Rachel on the way out.
Okay.
Even if you were reckless,
it wouldn't be
like core third.
Okay, that helps a little bit. But when does my flight end? When I get to the elevator.
So right, and the what we kind of I think is in the you know it's essentially
DC says that sort of said these robberies continue as long as the defendant is not satisfied with the location of the property.
Okay.
So this is the current case.
Okay.
This is now in bounds of
precedent. Then we have not gotten rid of aspartation, and you've got attempt in here. Right? Like, what?
Well, let's divide it out.
Okay.
I think it all makes sense. But, so current case law on, and it's relevant to aspartation, right, is where they're interpreting when does the aspartation end, because in theory, the robbery is still continuing, and so, right, if during the course of that, something else happens. That's where the question has arisen, and yeah, they're basically the case law is fuzzy.
What do you all intend?
To follow current case law.
Oh my god. Someone,
yeah, you snatch someone's wallet, and then within five steps, you knock over someone and severely injure them. Versus a block away, versus five blocks away, versus ten.
5 seconds, 5 minutes.
You know,
minutes,
we didn't,
do I have to knowingly still be fleeing? A block away.
Facilitate.
I mean, if I still think I'm fleeing a block away.
Right.
Wait. Hold on. No. It's to someone physically present. So it would not. Wait. So you're fleeing. You're recklessly causing.
Oh.
It's recklessly causing significant. The injury has to be to someone present.
Present.
So
when I take it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Wait.
I'm
where's that?
So look at every prong.
Give me a specific.
Oh, you're line. Right.
Sure.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I'm done. Turns out reading is fundamental.
Hold on. Can you clarify this for me, Michael?
Yeah, sure. Four, look at 4A, B, or C, and then all the similar prongs all the way up. It has to be against any other the physical force present. So the person has to be present at the time of the taking.
Well, or does the presence, does that count? Is everybody present along my flight?
Right, so I don't think we have to intended tactics necessarily exclude everyone along the right. Even
include
if your flight is extended that.
Yeah.
So you jump in a car and you've driven a block away and you injure someone.
Were they physically present?
Arguably, yeah. It wasn't intended to sort of
So this is true. An intentional fact, but maybe one that you like, right? Like
I don't know. He just.
So here's the question, and in general, the question is this, right? It's this question of again, where does the facilitating flight end, right? And is it again, if it wasn't somebody who was physically present, so takes off after you, right? Like okay. My elderly dad.
Physically present during the taking.
Way more physically fit than me, peels off, is like, and grabs the, Laura stealing my thing, a block away. Even though it's a block away, was physically present at the initial time, would be counted. The police officer a block away? No. Who hears the yelling and comes? No. So where that line is drawn, please put in comments on this. the DCCA case law on this, again, it's just fuzzy.
Well,
pretty
much none in the sense that, again, robbery doesn't require this extra injury. So whether you knock someone over a block or 10 blocks away, it just doesn't matter as long as you took the property from the person.
But so when they've been construing it, it's...
No, but when it matters, the reason why this is even in my mind is because I have... bad memories of my appellate rotation.
Okay.
And
you had one that raised some issues around this.
Well, it was like a little TBG kind of thing talking about somebody's case where there was, it was like felony murder, I think, right? Where
right,
some kids
right.
got
right.
hit and killed, and it was sort of
while
driving away.
Yeah. So, but that's a look. So just to be clear, there's a question for felony murder and robbery are similar in that they're like require a nexus and they're combination offenses. There's a similar but not identical nexus issue in felony murder because the killing has to be done in the course of committing whatever, if it's one of those where it has like a specific enumerated offense. So
I guess I only mean it's not, it's true, standalone robbery, but the reason why the discussion could happen.
Right.
Is because robbery...
Or has happened, yeah.
The reason why that as an issue came up in the case was because it was a question of when the robbery ended.
Right. And then this is a separate question. Sort of, this
as opposed to just like...
facilitating
yeah.
flight from the already completed robbery.
Part of the challenge, though, is that our current district robbery statute is one of the broadest in the country, and it's essentially shaved away a lot of these other pieces to just kind of like narrow it. Robbery is almost, anything. But then, like, in trying to move away from that and sand some of the edges, it does pop up some of these more difficult questions. But, the sort of like end point, at least with some of the things we've been talking about, is that whereas we're talking about multiple charges under current district law, at least in some situations under this statute, you're reducing that to one charge.
Right.
So
however we were to narrow this, in any way, so like okay, fine. That injury 5 blocks away is no longer can serve as the basis of an aggravating factor for robbery. fine. But
or
then
maybe
the person,
even robbery at all.
Or robbery at all, you know,
maybe
fine.
It's just
but
that
then
person.
It's now, like, that injury that may have occurred 5 blocks away, 10 blocks away, whatever, it can now be the basis of a separate charge and conviction for assault.
Right.
So...
Right.
Yeah, just
okay.
Right.
Okay.
Just
okay.
One,
okay.
One of the animating ideas in terms of this, you know, in terms of revised robbery statute, is that if you can comprehensively cover all the different components, you can sort of implicitly fix all of them or many of the multiple count issues that or would other arise because the elements of many of the sort of like second pieces here are the different types of assault.
Right.
At least in many situations, that means that no longer are we talking multiple counts.
Right.
It's just one count.
Right, which is permitted under current law, of course, right? If you
yes.
aggravated assault.
Right, but only if we clean up who the victim is.
Right, partly this goes to, like, penalties, right? Like, again, what we're talking about is, like, in the end, how to carve up liability for this between separate assault charges.
Right.
Which could be brought in any of the hypotheticals we're talking about,
okay.
And the robbery versus theft from a person. That's right. So ultimately, rearranging what charges can be brought. I don't think in the end, no conduct is being decriminalized. It's a matter of essentially what penalties are being appended, and that in part goes to like what and how enhancements plug in there.
Right,
and whether
you're achieving the goal of reducing unnecessary overlap.
That is always a concern of ours. And that unnecessary aspect of that phrase is where it's like, you know, tricky,
right? But
right?
we can't have my injury of Rachel, I was about to pick on Michael now, but I'll stick with Rachel, can't make Katya a robbery and I end up with an assault charge on Rachel.
Right, and I think Dave was even on board, right? Like, we want to end up in a place... Exactly.
Conviction.
Exactly. We want to end up in a place where you don't get sentenced for, or, you know, convictions at the end that double up this, but we also want to allow flexibility in charging up front so that, fine, bring whatever charges
you want.
You want
to. I'm not saying
well,
not,
yeah,
but
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
I get
you
know, it.
One would want
and to. And I'm already on record saying I think it's better to Court of Appeals to decide. And
right, so then, and then, like, ultimate, like, remedies for these kinds of things, you know, fine, we can address, some of this might be by statute, you know, in the robbery statute. Some of it could be, again, kind of something like we did, like you mentioned, for property offenses. We do something that has like a kind of a general merger provision. And then even there, even if we do that, then Dave had the variant last time for property offenses saying, okay, rather than, you know, kind of the write-up we had for merger on property offenses, to tweak that a bit to allow an initial conviction with an automatic kind of like a kick out if on appeal. After appeals have run. So, yes. Yes. So I think at this point, but any comments on, like, right, how to slice this up, right, you know, helpful. I feel like there's one thing, at least one thing... David earlier raised this question about like the fundamental break, structural kind of breakdown of robbery and having a two, David, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but yeah, and my sense was, so we'd been kind of saying, hey, it isn't addressed here, but I mentioned like, you know, having a theft from the person type thing to take care of the pickpocketing level stuff, is what you're proposing that there be. So right now, this kind of contemplates a theft from the person, and then this, you know, 3 degrees plus the aggravated, so kind of 4 degrees of robbery plus theft from the person. How would you carve it up differently, or what kind of conceptual...
I'm not sure how I would carve it. My issue is, I think at least in the District of Columbia, we consider that a robbery. If I grab that coffee and put my hand through her...
Yeah.
And pull it.
Yeah.
That's a robbery, and I think it changes, and you know, and maybe this is precisely why you're doing it.
Yeah.
It changes the nomenclature to suddenly call it a theft.
Right.
Where it has historically, in D.C., if I take it from your media control,
right.
even if I don't inflict a lot, when I don't inflict any injury, that's a classic robbery.
Yeah.
And to me, it sounds like a watering down, just using the nomenclature of a theft to or whatever it translates to call it something.
Gotcha.
So whether the elements necessarily have to change, I haven't really thought through yet.
Okay.
But the nomenclature bothers me, because to me that is a different type of robbery. It always has been, as far back as I've been able to read the cases about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it to me, that is a significant change, just the name, whatever the penalty is.
Gotcha. Okay. So
now, of course, we still don't know penalties, so that might be an additional thing, because we're putting off everything.
Right.
But to me, that there is meaning in naming.
Gotcha.
And there are other names that in this section, like you talked about, you know, I think I mentioned to you, criminal threat versus a threat. It's a threat. It's criminal menacing versus menacing. I think the words have meaning.
Good. So, and just to go back to the robbery point, it sounds like the solution that you might would favor would be, instead of theft from a person, it would be a fourth degree robbery. Like, in other words, we call it robbery. It's a lower, you know, it goes down maybe, you know, further, but like
that's what
your pitch is. Okay,
that's one possibility. The other would be having a whole separate structure of robbery stealth of grab versus robbery force and injury, which has its own set of elements to it that may be somewhat parallel, but not necessarily stuck in the same range.
And specifically, the robbery label, like you wouldn't want to have like a separate pickpocketing.
Pickpocketing, sort of, you know, to me that's like the shoplifting of theft too. It doesn't do away with thefts, it simply is a special class of it.
Gotcha. Good. Anything else here on, I'm sorry, robbery right now?
So what, I'm sorry, where did you land on pickpocketing?
I think you would say that's robbery too, right?
Like, to me,
it's just
a
lower level.
To me, pickpocketing would be like, rob.
So if we called pickpocketing, that would be okay or would not be okay?
I don't have a problem with an offense for pickpocketing, just like I don't have a problem with an offense for shoplifting. But that doesn't mean that I don't want a theft to offense when it's taken, you know, when it's taken from a store, also under whatever conditions we set up theft two for. To me, it's sort of parallel. It's sort of like
Well, you were just saying names matter, so I wanted to know what name you wanted to put to pickpocketing.
Do you
want to call it pickpocketing?
I don't have a problem with an offense called pickpocketing. Like I don't have a problem with an offense called shoplifting.
Would you have a problem with no offense called pickpocketing and just the theft two?
I think I might, because I view pickpocketing possibly as a plea down offense, just like shoplifting is, or a possibility of I mean, that goes back to your unnecessary overlap.
Mm-hmm.
I am not fully on board with what is unnecessary mean, because I think, you know, like an OWI is a, you know, basically is the same elements as a DUI. I don't see a problem with having an offense that allows for a lesser penalty in order to make the system operate more smoothly. So in that same way, I don't have a problem with shoplifting, I don't have a problem with pickpocketing.
So is there a difference, maybe this is part of what's going on, between the conduct of pickpocketing versus the other kind of sudden stealthy grabbing, right? Like in some sense, pickpocketing is one form of that. It might not be sudden, but it's stealthy. But there's no, you know, there's no physical harm.
There's no
we
touching.
Don't have, we'd have an assault.
There's
otherwise,
not. There's
right?
not actually. Well, yeah.
But, you know,
you're right.
So. But you would generally characterize this class of activity of the non-assaultive. On kind of physical harm forms of robbery as still within the robbery rubric, although you're open to the fact that there might be some discrete thing that's like a plea down offense.
That's right.
I think partly the way this is set up now, the theft from a person would be the plea down offense. It was kind of the way this was kind of contemplated. But again, those categories could be rejiggered. Okay.
We object. I mean, we'll all put in our comments.
No, exactly. I feel like there was one or two other threads that had kind of come up in this conversation on robbery. Anything else on robbery? Then we if not, we can move to, you know, David just kind of raised this issue of the labeling and nomenclature for criminal threats, criminal menace versus just menacing and threats. I don't know if that's if that's something you want to talk about more or not, but I also don't want to like move from robbery yet if there's anything more. Good. Well, thoughts on the naming then? I guess I could just say, you know, I think we communicated this a bit in conversation today, but like our only thought in doing that was that, you know, partly as a drafting matter, it can be useful to kind of distinguish, you know, while in most cases, ordinary intuitions about what constitutes a threat is going to match the elements of what we call a criminal threat, but not always. And so there's this sense of like, you know, the label being, you know, making clear this is more of a technical type of thing, right? It's not just any threat, as may popularly be thought, but it's a particular kind of thing, a criminal threat, is somewhat useful. It also, like, as a drafting matter, if every time we kind of refer to a threat, we then, and we could draft around this, we'd have to say, you know, are you talking about a threat in general, or are you talking about the codified offense of threats? So it's just these are drafting matters.
Than criminal assault versus non-criminal assault. I mean, you know, yeah. Those issues. I mean, to me, it seems sort of random adding the word criminal, because the word criminal. Right now, we say threats. In fact, there are two forms of threats that could happen under the current law, mm-hmm. and we call it threats. And I don't see anybody being confused by that. Mm-hmm. And I don't see the adding of the word criminal, unless that's then defined somewhere, as being particularly helpful.
Yeah.
And I don't want to define the term criminal and criminal threats, because I think that raises a whole more problems than it solves. Otherwise, we're just putting a word in there.
Sure. Yeah, and the only thing I think it's doing, I don't think it has a substantive meaning other than to flag that whenever that language is being used, threats versus criminal threats. Criminal threats means we're talking about a specific offense, a specific crime, versus general behavior. And why here and not there? I think the question there is, you know, again, threats in particular are very kind of, you know, common language. If there are subtleties to the actual offense, right, as the Carroll decision, you know, tries to flesh out, that are not necessarily, maybe they're not counterintuitive, but they're not immediately intuitive. And
are there any situations where you would use the non-technical threat in defining a crime?
Yeah, so I, and this
maybe
is,
that's the part I'm missing.
That's right. That's right. And I think, like, you know, it's a real kind of questions. We look again, for instance, at solving this kind of nesting issue with robbery. You know, is it, if we wanted to simplify this, and we haven't, I don't mean to like suggest that we've thought this fully through, but you know, like one option for that is instead of referring to a specific offense, you refer generally to threats, right? Or again, I think this also, you know, more likely place this is going to come up is like instead of referring to an assault, we refer to bodily injury more generally. So the answer is, at this point, no, we haven't encountered that yet, but it may be.
I wouldn't be in favor of doing that. I just like the example you just gave, I would use a different word than threats,
gotcha.
Because I can just picture those court of appeal arguments now, saying, well, they use threat, they use criminal threat, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
And we're off to the races depending on whose ox is being.
Yeah, we need to be careful about that. So, yeah.
My preference would be calling it menacing and threats, just like threats under the current statute. And if we end up with that issue, we use a different word, and if necessary, define that word.
Sure. Good. Other thoughts? Put in the comments if you have some. But like any other,
it didn't strike me as a problem. Although. Just because I don't think I've been focusing on titles, but I don't disagree with Dave about the criminal. I do want to say with respect to theft from a person and calling things robbery, that, you know, I agree with Dave. Labels matter, And I think part of the effort we need to be making is to not give labels that are worse than the conduct. And if what you had to put down on a job application is, you know, robbery sixth degree, who the fuck knows? Who cares? Like, what is that? That's robbery. When really, it's pickpocketing. And that's a really, really serious thing. And the fact that we've define the conduct low, and it's only going to have some little bit of time, we've called it robbery. I mean, I have not seen what you're doing with murder yet, but I certainly hope we still have something called manslaughter and not fifth-degree murder, right? Like, that's a big deal. Those titles are a big deal. And I think robbery is huge. It is a problem that it is as broad as it is in the district. And one of the things I would like to come out of this project is that robbery gets narrowed and we don't call minor conduct robbery, something that serious. It doesn't mean it's not criminalized, it doesn't mean it's not punished, but that nobody ends up with the label of being a robber for something that wasn't what most people think of when they think of the word robbery and when they think of what that crime is. So anyway, that's my feeling. But I do agree as he talks about it, the criminal menacing and criminal threats didn't strike me at all, but I think Dave is right that criminal is
unnecessary.
I don't really like
it. Unnecessary or confusing.
We had that in South Carolina. We had criminal domestic violence, and then they changed it to domestic violence, which led to the, like, in poor taste joke that we had decriminalized domestic violence.
And
we got rid of that, of that terminology.
Yeah.
The idea was that we don't use that prefix in any other.
Yeah.
Designation, so it's kind of superfluous if it's a criminal code.
Yeah. No. Good. Good. There might have been one other again earlier thread that you raised on something else, Laura. I'm thinking of that, but
I threw in something about attempts, just because I like to. Because I just, but
okay.
I'm
Can
okay.
I just like to poke that.
I do.
Bit. Poke.
Can I ask a question on criminal threats?
Yes.
As long as we're there?
Yep, you bet.
And I might have asked this of you last week. If
sure.
I did, I apologize for not remembering the answer. But in threat, in an effective consent to the threat, are you consenting to the assault that is being threatened? Or are you consenting to being threatened?
Right.
What is the consent go to?
That's right, and we would mean the latter, right? Not to, this tries to really distinguish whatever the predicate conduct is, like an assault or property damage,
15.
Yeah, and if it's helpful,
I see some things should be a statement saying getting into
sure
into that sort of
now,
dispute the range of it.
Now I think it is, there's still going to be, I think, a lot of factual dispute over this, which is to say, like, you know, if somebody thinks, you know, right, say on the property damage form of threat, you know, I believe, you know, Laura has given effective consent to, I don't know, like, get rid of that old bike she has. So I think I had consent to, like, take it and crush it or do whatever, you know. And then I, you know, show up one day and yell, you know, out, you know, I'm gonna smash up your bike. See ya. And, you know, okay. You know, I can see factual scenarios where it becomes a question whether the effective consent as to the underlying conduct is very much conflated with what appears to be a threat otherwise to engage in that conduct. So factually, they might often, they might come up together.
Do that one more time and I'll smash your bike up.
Yeah. You know, but I think what was intended was it's just to the act of the threat, the main kind of the act of the communication.
And I'm fine with that. I just want to clarify because I could see that issue raising because of the way it's structured, the way that offense is structured.
Yeah.
Can I ask one more question? I'm sorry. This horse is so dead, and I'm just going to keep eating it. With respect to the dangerous weapon, let me find it. So I'm in chapter 14.
Which
definition of
Dangerous weapon? I feel like I should find it before I open my mouth. So chapter 14.
I've got it on the screen. If that's helpful for folks.
Yes. Any object or substance other than a body part that in a manner of its actual attempt or threaten is likely to cause death or serious bodily injury. Who decides the likely? The judge as a matter of law? The jury as judge or jury as fact finder? Is that a question of sort of fact?
I believe it is a question of fact. And we could clarify that in the commentary, which is to say, you know, was the dangerous weapon...
good luck, Concha.
The object involved, right? Was it in fact, you know, an object that's, you know, that's right. It's a question of fact.
Okay.
And I assume it would be now also, right? Like, you know, like, look, you know, person brandished object that, you know, just always in case.
Right, the problem is the in fact stuff. The problem is the in fact throws me off about okay. when does that happen? When is something, who's deciding whether it's in fact? That's the part that's been tripping me up from the minute I read it.
Gotcha.
It's the like, so it just as anyone who's had to listen to me know, I just have trouble with it. But it does help to say, even if it is in fact, it is still a factual question, not a question of law, about whether it's likely. I mean, that likely is just, that just feels like someone should...
Yeah, and that's from case law. We pulled that.
Okay.
Yeah, in fact, under current case law, this is slightly narrowing in that under current case law, there's the sort of designed to be used category of dangerous weapons, and so once the court in one case has determined that object X was designed to be used that way, that alone is a dangerous weapon regardless of its manner of use, whereas here...
So that's why we have the A through
exactly.
E kind of things above that kind of cover that ground. So this is... This definition as a whole is trying to cover both the per se...
Right.
You know, the A through E versions...
Right.
And then the F, the catch-all, which, again, case law recognizes, or any other, you know.
Okay.
And so F might very well be redundant, right? You know, if it's a, you know.
Right,
firearm
right, sure,
is defined
sure,
and, but,
sure.
But yeah.
Okay, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Other thoughts or questions? give everybody a last minute to kind of look over their notes if there's anything else. Otherwise, we can wrap up. And again, I know, you know, you know, the level of typos may not be the best suited for comments, but besides that, really feel free to toss in anything. I mean, again, this is a draft. I think particularly as compared to some of the other, you know, property fences, this is trickier stuff, right? Like, we're dealing with, you know, assault is, you know, common law offense in the district, right? You know, we're, you know, there's more moving pieces, there's more case law that's being accounted for, and you know, so the draft, you know, is a little bit in some ways rougher around the edges than might be on the prior offenses. So feel free to note things and raise things, and we'll do our best to review them all and move forward.
So, this is another one I think we talked a little bit about last week. Gets back to that pickpocket versus theft versus robbery one. So I stick my hand in your pocket and I yell, "I'm robbing you."
Yeah.
That is a threat? What is that?
Yeah, so...
It's a theft?
It's
not a robbery, it's a theft.
Right.
Even though it's not the classic pickpocket where you don't know.
Right.
Right? I grab the phone from the guy on the bench.
Yeah. So I think, you know, arguably, right. The way it works in the robbery statute right now, we have second degree criminal menace, which is, again, simply the threat version, right?
That's right.
And then bump up, second degree robbery is first degree criminal menace, which is essentially the armed menacing, right? Like, you know, a threat, you know, while armed. So you're raising questions, you know, whether either of those are triggered.
If I say I'm robbing you or I got a gun, whatever.
That's right.
Those are two different things I could yell as I'm reaching and grabbing what might otherwise be a a pickpocket.
That's right. Now, again, you know, we look at the elements of for menacing. Does that conduct fit this? I think it probably does, or at least arguably does, right? You know, menacing, got on the screen, you know, communicating to another person physically present by displaying or making physical contact with a dangerous weapon or imitation dangerous weapon, right? You know, case laws there.
I'm not saying there is actually a weapon.
You know, that will commit, you know, robbery and you know, I intended to be as, you know. Now, again, are you, you know, it's kind of hard not, I don't know, maybe there's some defense theory there that would say, like, when somebody, you know, right, puts their finger in their pocket, points it as if it
no,
were
that's
a gun,
not, that's
you know.
Not my hypo.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My hypo is, as I'm doing an activity which would otherwise be a robbery stealth, which is now a theft.
Yeah.
I yell, either I'm robbing you, right, as I'm doing that, or I've got a gun. Whether I have a gun or not. Let's say I don't even have a gun.
Right.
I yell, I have a gun, and I take it.
Gotcha.
From you. That's my hypo.
So,
not.
So I think then you're still hitting the menace. The
right.
Degree.
But that's what I'm having trouble seeing in menacing, how that actually works. Because I guess with when I yell I'm having a gun, that's the threat.
Right.
Right.
And
yeah,
that
exactly.
Takes it in. But if I merely yell I'm robbing you while I take it.
Yeah.
I think the menacing offense is, again, tended to be sort of flexible in that it sort of takes into the context, and so that the words I'm gonna rob you, to the extent that they'd be construed as creating that imminent fear of harm, would still constitute criminal menace. The exact facts, I mean, I don't know exactly how it might play out, but that would sort of be the issue. Said, I'm robbing you, or any other sort of, you know, mildly threatening phrase that you might come up with.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think it would be covered, and it would be, you know,
right,
most likely the third degree robbery. Yeah.
It
wouldn't
be not third degree robbery?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
it would be the robbery.
Pickpocketing plus saying I'm robbing you.
Yeah, because
the problem is I haven't fully mastered all how all together. Of these fit together.
Sure. So again, third degree robbery, taking the theft from the person type behavior. Great. Yeah, I haven't punched you. I haven't done anything yet. Right. So it gets you the first three elements, and the fifth with intent to deprive. Question is four.
Yeah, that's right.
And here, what we would say is that kind of threat, oral threat, would constitute a second degree second degree criminal menace.
Okay, got it.
That's the hook.
Thank you.
That's the
hook. I put a check mark next to it, meaning I didn't need to comment on it, and then didn't remember why. Thank you.
Yep. Any last thoughts or questions? If not, there are some more cookies out there still, and we'll call it an early meeting. Our next meeting is, April 4th. Send out a reminder. Again, we'll send out, the agenda is just primarily going to be the written comments, talking through the written comments that are due this Friday, what we receive. If there's anything urgent at that point has already come up that people want to talk about, the new drafts going out on homicide and solicitation, renunciation, child abuse, we could broach those too. I think that's, maybe there's a burning question to share with the group while you're reviewing it. There will be a second bite of that apple for the early May meeting when it's getting closer to comments being due. My guess is that's probably the prime time to have group discussion about those pending drafts.
I just want to say I appreciate you guys taking the time out last week to go through this.
Absolutely.
I find these the pre-meets help me focus the memos and maybe not make them as long as they otherwise had been.
Yep. No, thank you. And again, anybody else who wants to take us up on that, we're happy to do it. Yep. Great. Thank you all. We'll call it a meeting. Turn the recorder off. And again, more.